thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio, featuring The Crew, where a former pro football player and a D3 All-Star use strength and conditioning as an excuse to talk about anything but. Now here's John and Tex.
Power Athlete Nation, what's happening? I am here with Mr. Jim Davis, former...
What's up, Tex?
Hello. Power Athlete Radio alum, episode 242. And we have very targeted conversation and discussion we're getting after today. John Wellborn is on a little vacation getaway. I don't blame him. It's about 30 degrees in Austin, Texas, and he's taken to some warmer weather. But I needed to get a conversation rolling with my old pal Jim because he just posted a blog for powerathletehq.com. And it's all about grit. And while I'm sitting in this freezing barn talking about the weather, I'm developing what Jim would call grit. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. I really feel for you. I don't know if you know this, but I'm in Chicago. I think you do know that. And it's about 5 degrees. So
yeah, but you're used to it.
Yeah, it is.
I was born in humidity. I love humidity. People complain about it, but I thrive in it. It holds my hair up. It's amazing. And if it drops to 30 degrees, I'm not a happy man. Not to mention my truck doesn't have heat, air conditioning, defrost, any of that good stuff. So I like to live dangerously.
So that's what sort of saves us in Chicago. Heavy coats and heated seats in cars. So you're going from a truck without heat to a barn without heat and cold concrete floors. Yeah, you're developing something for sure. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some grit going on.
There are some concepts here with grit. And before the show, we were talking a little bit about your getting after it with high school athletes. Explain your role, your position with high school, and how you're able to operate and still get kids strong, fit, and ready to play sport even in these COVID times?
Ooh, that's a big question. The way it looks right now, because it has evolved. We've had probably 7 or 8 different iterations of this through the last 11 months. But at the moment, we are my day job. So Good Athlete Project is pretty much me all the time. My day job is at an amazing place called Nutrier High School. It's a 4,000 person high school just north of Chicago. We serve a ton of athletes, really high caliber kids. And what it looks like right now is we have 2,000 people moving through our facilities. Our facilities were not built for 2,000. Our primary weight room is probably built for 35. Hmm. And space limitations due to COVID have limited that space to 21. We have a field house with we set down some puzzle flooring and made some Olympic stations. And we've got a field house that serves about 45 at a time. And then we've got an auxiliary gym that we did the same thing. We sort of brought some old, really old, version 1 Sorinex, old school steel racks that have been around for ages into this old gym. And now we've got sort of a third lifting space. And what we do is over the course of 80 sessions, we move those 2,000 athletes of, all sorts of sports. We serve about 28 to 30 sports, depending on which coaches opt in. And all levels from freshmen to varsity kids trying to get scholarships. And I'll say we do it really systematically. We think, in fact, as it maps onto this discussion, we've got a pretty clear idea of what we're trying to accomplish. We know that February, when outdoor training is not an option, is sort of a short stretch. This is our sprint. And we've got sort of passion and perseverance for the long-term goal of equipping with these kids with the mindset and essentially a state of performance readiness to go play in the cold early spring of Chicago. But dude, it's early mornings, it's late nights, it's like a true takes a village thing. The school is incredibly supportive all the way to the principal and superintendent. They're wildly supportive. They've seen what we've done for kids in the past. I have an amazing staff. Just an unbelievable staff of coaches, and yeah, we're getting it done.
Beautiful, man. And where do you find your team of coaches? Do you recruit former athletes that make their way back to town and hit you up because you did such an impactful job? Or is it sport coach taking an interest, a history teacher who's like, hey, I lift weights? Where do you pull these coaches?
That's a really good question. I'm thinking about my staff now. So I've thought about this from the start. So the build of that new career program was me. Like, I literally one day pulled a desk into an old weight room, and it was me with essentially the football team, and it evolved to one of the largest high school, if not the largest high school strength program in the nation. Just me to a full staff, et cetera, et cetera. It's taken a while. I've been at it for a little while now. You may have heard me say stuff like this before, but this is all coming back to the question of where do I find these coaches? The whole process is about two very primary things: results and relationships. And if either is lacking, you don't build, you don't evolve. And because both of those have been fairly strong for us, recruiting coaches hasn't been terribly hard. My first group of coaches, I think we had two, then we had five. And those were sort of, like you said, in building people, strength coaches who were, sport coaches who watched us work, had a background, wanted to get involved. That's excellent. Some of those guys, we've moved on to other jobs, actually. Alex, who's now the strength coach at a different high school around Chicago, St. Vider High School, another great place. And our current staff, I'm trying to think, I think our current staff, except for one, they're all products of the program.
Beautiful.
So they're all graduates of the school who've gone on to college. Most of them played sports, and this is sort of an humbling idea. They recognized how impactful this was in their life and wanted to give back to kids. And now that I say that, it's this, I appreciate you asking the question, because I'm reflecting on it a little bit. Like, none of them was like a kinesiology major. None of them studied to do this. They were all like education, psychology, that sort of realm, and just recognized the power of strength and conditioning as a platform for those things. So it's pretty cool.
I mean, at that age, everything works in the weight room. So I would argue it's almost more important to have a different background and then have a tooled up coach like yourself teach them how to teach kids to lift weights. But then they have that baseline, established the psychology and the other tools that are more interpersonal, more vital. Honestly, if I'm a high school athlete that is not moving on to a collegiate sport and getting ready for the real world.
Oh yeah, that's really good. Tex, that's smart. That's right. You know, and I don't even know that we did that intentionally. Like, there's one guy on my summer staff who I'm hoping to recruit once he's in grad school right now. I'm hoping to recruit him to the staff once he graduates. But he's the first kinesiology guy. And he's sort of got a very special interest in psych. But like you said, it's that other stuff that really is most important. You can figure out, you know, you can dig into an existing toolkit. You know, we've got all the programming already done, more or less. We make some adaptations. You know, we adapt regularly, actually, but you get the idea. They can learn that stuff. The human to human interaction is so key. And since you asked, there's been two times over the last 10 years that we did not recruit someone like in the network, in the circle, to come join the staff. And we posted on whatever probably the NSCA job board. I think we posted one or both on LinkedIn. And both times we got really, really good people, really good strength coaches. But for whatever reason, neither stuck. And of course I won't go, you know, totally anonymous. And I mean it when I say wonderful people, but it became clear that something was probably, there was a gap there. And the gap was probably the psych background or the level of adaptability or the realization that something was going on here beyond reps and sets. You know, one person in particular was so overqualified for an assistant position on my staff, which, you know, it's like after, you know, it's limited amount of hours. It's not a full-time job. So overqualified and a genuinely good person, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't sort of heavy enough, you know, it wasn't sort of to a T scientific enough. I think for this person to really get excited about it. And maybe most importantly, I think this person found it really hard to build relationships with people, and hard to sort of be empathetic about, you know, what it was like to be 16 or 17.
Well, they are going to have a hard time. I mean, getting those long-term fulfilling, I mean, more so fulfilling jobs. Dude, the strength and conditioning profession is in an interesting place now where it's very flooded. So you have a lot of overqualified people applying for certain positions. And then, man, how do you test and how do you interview for those interpersonal skills to get this person the right fit? I mean, do you have all these guys come and lift weights with you during your interviews that are non like high school kids that you knew?
I think that's really funny. It's funny because I was talking to the newly appointed head football coach at Knox College, a guy I actually played with back in the day. And he was talking about how
rewind our listeners where you played football. No big deal.
Oh, college football?
Yeah.
The name of the elite institution at Knox College?
Yeah, Division III. No big deal. I mean, basically the Harvard of the Midwest.
Division III Knox College. So that's funny because when I went to Harvard for grad school, I tried to get it going that this was actually the Knox of the East and people didn't pick up on it. But
Power Athlete Nation is now aware that Knox is that Harvard University D is the Knox of the East Coast.
I tried to get it going, Tex. There's still a chance. So, but to the point, Aaron Willett's new head football coach, he's young. He's all about it, crazy passionate and really about relationships. And that was one of the things he said. He's like, we were just spitballing ideas. He's like, I want to have recruiting meetings with my staff in the weight room. I want a healthy staff. I want one that walks the walk. And I want to have sort of casual interactions like that, you know?
Oh yeah.
And so to answer your question, it may seem silly, but I don't think I don't do that formally or intentionally, invite people into the weight room, but honestly, some of the best hires I've been able to make over the past 10 years have been literally guys graduate, come back, say, you know, hey, Davis, is the weight room open? And they come back, we get a lift in, and we just start to talking about what they think they want to do, where they think they want to go. And if there's an opportunity for me to support them, and that includes bringing them onto the staff and getting them a little bit of a paycheck as they figure out their lives, then, you know, that's the sort of organic growth that we often look for.
Mm-hmm. They're far enough removed. None of these guys went to school with the current kids and athletes, but is there like a siblings connection there?
They are. Yeah, there is some for sure. The, our summer staff is usually a little younger. Those are, we go up to about 17 employees over the summer on a coaching staff. Which is a lot, but they're great. And a lot of those are current college athletes. So yeah, there is some familiarity there. If they didn't play with somebody, there's some sibling crossover. So, that's one of the things though, we've got an internship packet, which has turned into just like a hiring, you know, an onboarding guide that includes like how to have, you know, how to talk to people. What are some of the barriers that we can't cross that may not seem obvious to someone at first? What can you do? What can you not do? Can you give out your cell phone? Well, I know this guy's brother and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah. But, you know, so there are different challenges. But overall, man, it's like I said, we couldn't do what we're doing without what I think is the best high school strength staff in the nation. They're awesome.
And you have the Good Athlete Project. This is your opportunity to operate and look how your education systems and approach and view happens in real time on the weight room floor. And then you are able to stand up and educate and empower other coaches what you're actually doing within the weight room using Good Athlete Project. And that's the beauty of it. Why I love it. In Texas high school, everything is so secret. What we're doing, we can't tell anybody about. So we're going to hold on to our precious strength programs and practice schedules. And it's like, chill out, man. Everybody does the same drills, but it's all about now how you connect, relate to your team and building the team to then have them step on the field and kick some ass or graduate and go on and be more than a high school all-star and peak at that moment in time. Well, not calling Luke out at all.
He does have a ring, Tex.
I know. I'm just jealous.
Me too. The Yeah, well, you're definitely speaking my language, obviously, because you know that I believe that if the experience ends when they graduate, then it wasn't that meaningful an experience. And that goes for the college athletes we've had an opportunity to work with. We've had an opportunity to work with some pros and some Olympians and Olympic hopefuls. And it's the same thing. Like you've heard me say this before too, but like there's only one truth of an athletic experience, and that is after it starts, one day it's going to end. There's that's the absolute only truth. You might not make a single friend. You might not get bigger, faster, stronger. You may never win a game, or you might win a championship. Nearly irrelevant, because one day this is going to be over. And when it is, what are you left with? That's the question. Mm-hmm. So that's where most of our work focuses. And that's why I think, honestly, you know, we're not a, you know, I mentioned how many kids we work with. We're not, like, we don't give out scholarships. Those kids don't have to show, you know, this isn't a fully opt-in program. So the idea that we have all these coaches back and that all these student athletes want to be part of it, is really meaningful. And I don't think that gets done if we're just doing biceps and bench press.
No way. And yeah, that love for coaches, I know from my high school experience, we all still make fun of and use our coaches' voices as jokes and props and backhanded compliments. But at the same time, we did not have a positive experience. So that was, I mean, it's still memorable, but not in a good way. I want to stick with what you said, what you left with. And that is what I feel is an attribute of the article that you have on our powerathletehq.com in grit. So let's break down your kids walk away from the high school in a better version of themselves, whether they go on to coach or play collegiate sports. And grit is certainly an aspect of that. The challenge is you now have to educate and empower all of your coaching staff to be on the same page, mm-hmm. to then put your athletes in position to develop grit. So let's break some shit, man. Let's
do it. And yeah, for sure, man. And we've identified every year, just so people know, like you've heard my thing, my spiel. It's like sports don't teach life lessons. Coaches teach life lessons, coaches mm-hmm. and cultures. That's where the life lessons come from. If not, like you just said, it is a memorable time. You know, something's going to be sort of learned, you know, people are sponges, but it's not like shooting a basketball gives you quote like grit. You know what I mean? It's not that playing football develops the growth mindset that maps on to future success that one would hope. Like these things have to be done really intentionally. So yeah, grit's an interesting one because, you know, it became like just boomed maybe like, I don't know, 2017-ish. Mm-hmm. Whenever Angela Duckworth came out with that book, I don't remember when it was, but wouldn't you say in the last, I don't know, 5 to 8 years, grit has been sort of everywhere.
I mean, the book is very impactful and she takes an amazing scientific approach to outline this. And what is interesting to me is how she was able to implement her grit test with the West Point Academy. That can never be replicated now. Now, kids, it's like the SAT, the test you can't study for. They're studying for that test. So that's where I think we're going to get this new evolution of what it means to actually, like individuals like yourself, empower and develop this in our young athletes.
Right. You're totally right, man. And just, I guess, a little overview, because you mentioned it, a little overview of her work. A lot of her, especially her early and probably most impactful grit studies, they were all involving high achievers. So it was like national spelling bee champs or hopefuls and West Point cadets and like already high achievers. So what she essentially found was that among those who were sort of already motivated and ambitious and fairly talented, there were certain determining factors between which from among that pool, who would go on to succeed and who not so much. And she named it grit. And I think it's really important. I hope everyone can recognize this, that, you know, if we deal sort of, if we continue to deal in abstractions, we get whatever result we get, you know? And so for a long time, grit was just synonymous with like tough, and that's fine, but it's an actual word now used in the realm of psychology. It's highly researched, Angela and her team have named it. And so now grit has a definition. So that's one thing that I like. I don't want to get too nitpicky with it, but like when I talk about grit and when my staff talks about grit, it is a very specific thing that we're referring to. And what it is it's passion and perseverance toward long-term goals. And I've actually, there's two different definitions, kind of, they're both incredibly similar. The other is the tendency to sustain interest in and effort toward very long-term goals. But in either case, it's this idea that it's very near perseverance, resilience, things like that. But it is an absolute differentiating factor. And if so, wouldn't we want to teach for it? And the answer obviously is yes. Then the following question becomes, well, then how? How do we teach for grit? And going back to the same idea, we cannot assume that doing tough things like playing football, going through doubles is going to automatically make us gritty. What it might do is just make us sort of tougher as a byproduct of our circumstance. But if we can't call upon grit as a capacity down the line when we have professional, relational, whatever struggles, if we can't go call upon that quality, then what good was it really? You know, and that's actually, to be honest, that's something that I had to learn early on before we go into like the science of it. Like I played 16 seasons of football. That was an empowering thing for me. I know that I had physical and mental toughness to do certain things that most people would never do. They, you know, they'd never even subject themselves to a football doubles, 2-day practices in the heat, you know, and that was good. And that was empowering, but I found that it was also insufficient. Like I said, like when I was out of college, I pursued a career in football for a short time. When that career in football was over, it was like, well, what the heck do I do now? Like, how do I apply that toughness or that skill to other realms? And this is to no fault of my coaches whatsoever. I was really lucky. I got amazing coaches. But I'm not sure we ever did the mental exercises it takes to fully sort of, you mentioned toolkit earlier, take the tool of grit, put it in the kit and move on to the next stage in my life, which, you know, again, too often we think this happens automatically. It does not. Mm-hmm. So that was part of the inspiration for this article and why we actually at the project and at Nutrier, have it as one of our big three. We have grit, growth mindset, and gratitude is
three G's.
The three G's that are well studied, that are well documented as successful for, you know, along the course of one's life, and that we try to teach for.
And this, I love this sustained interest and sustained effort, because inherently you were doing this. You were doing this with performance football and leadership in that respect. There's no way you don't play that long without developing a voice within your and a confidence in your body and your abilities to then communicate and stand and pull others up to your level. And what that's why I see, yeah, it's definitely part of the Good Athlete Project, big three G's, because your sustained interest, sustained effort, and the long-term goal of the Good Athlete Project, hell, man, that's right in the definition.
It's true, dude. That's what it is. It's a project. It's you have to have long-term goals, and you are nailing it, by the way, because what we found, and we talked about this in the article a little bit, one of the biggest surprises, I think, that we had when we started doing workshops with teams and coaches, and now myself personally, more one-on-one personal development coaching, is that you'd be amazed at how often there's a lack of a clear goal. You know, passion, you can't have passion, perseverance toward long-term goals if there's no goal. You know, mm-hmm. If you just have, you know, a lot of people just have sort of juice, you know, like they, you know, they've got passion, they're willing to persevere, but if they don't know the direction, you know, they're supposed to head, then that becomes a problem. So just because there's nothing really to reflect on, you know, you can't evaluate outcomes relative to the outcome you hope for if you don't have a really clear hope for outcome. So
oh, yeah.
That's inherent. Sorry.
No, I'm agreeing with you. And the passion is certainly in this strength coach profession. We meet a lot of passionate individuals. And I recently heard Brett Bartholomew describe Passion, great, but at the same time, there is a level of poor communication. You're passionate and you want it, but you're unable to then communicate with the sport coach or with the athlete, and then you find yourself, because of your poor communication skills, in a rough spot emotionally, physically, because you call it passion. Not you, but the proverbial, right. This is Brett's, and I certainly will get him on here to have this conversation, but that's that pinged, because I was there as a coach who poor communication with my staff led to some, disagreements, and I would blame them rather than looking in this growth mindset. This is pre-growth mindset, even understanding and Dweck reading of her great book, Mindset. And right. Man, it's out there. So certainly the words, the definitions that you introduce in the article, and the importance of having these in line with then an individual athlete, coach, person just lifting weights in your garage, having right. a goal. As simple as or as small as that goal may be, it's something that you can aim towards to then take that step. And really, I mean, that's to make quality decisions that will lead you down the right path to then accomplish that goal.
Right. It's totally true. And as long as you name it, like you kind of can't be wrong. You know, our thing, I keep saying that same sort of preface, but you know, one of our mantras is, does your behavior match your goal? It really is aligned with this idea. And your goal, like, there's no judgment on the goal. It could be whatever you want. You know, the goal could be just to develop toughness. That's fine. That's fair. So there's one way to develop toughness: do tough things. Fine. But recognize that's what you are getting or not getting. That's your evaluation tool. That's the barometer, so to speak. Like, but if you're saying, you know, how many coaches are hired and they say, like, we're trying to build better people, better parents, better members of the community, better, you know, all these things. Well, if those are your explicit goals, then you have to reflect on the question of whether or not you're actually doing that. I think a lot of people are really, in a really well-intended way, just coaching for toughness sometimes, which again is fine.
If it's, structured and intended versus
right.
just getting after these kids without any progression, just putting them in hard scenarios or punishment under the guise of, oh, we're making them tough. No, there, right. there needs to be lessons weaved in, or at least progressions.
100%. And please note that I'm making space for those folks who haven't fully identified it yet, but I'm with you 100%. Like you can build toughness thoughtfully and in a way that aligns with like, you know, sort of best practice in strength and conditioning, obviously. And that's the way to go. And I hate to say it, you don't want to ever hurt someone ever, in the strength and conditioning setting, but like, that's pretty good feedback. I don't know if anyone would say, I want to build toughness and the outcome of injured players is of no consequence to me, then that person doesn't belong in coaching. Yeah. So I hope that would be assumed, but I guess you never know.
Have you read The Gift of Injury by Dr. Stu McGill?
The Gift of it? No.
Oh my goodness gracious. You got to pick that up.
I'm writing it down right now.
Yeah. Stu's been on Power Athlete Radio a couple times. Amazing.
I've seen that name, yeah.
Oh yeah. Amazing mustache. He's the, he's the back doctor. So the NFL, if there's any injury, they send him to Dr. Stu McGill, based out of Canada. Great interview. I'll send you the links after this. I don't have the show numbers in front of me, but the gift of injury. So it's not like he's asking people to intentionally injure your athletes so they can learn this lesson. It's a right. note to the athletes that then walks you through the mindset and the process to return to yeah. competition.
Did he speak at your last symposium? No,
no,
there was a doctor there.
Yeah, that was Dr. Craig Bueller.
Okay, AIM it.
AIM it Systems, and he's based out of Salt Lake City, Utah. John used him, or still utilizes him. I don't believe they saw each other during his career, but
yeah,
Also another great mind.
I should have read that Stu McGill thing, man. You know this, but this actually, it fully maps onto our grit conversation because, you know, I think you know this, you know, I had a knee injury this summer. It was like my first major, like I said, I played 16 seasons of football. After football, I did some powerlifting and my first major injury came in just like a stupid frick. I was running around the neighborhood, literally, and ran into
prancing.
An immovable object.
Didn't you step on like a parking lot barrier or something, just prancing?
No, prancing, yeah. No, I did. It was maybe dumber than that. I was crossing a street. I live in Wicker Park neighborhood in Chicago. I was crossing a street. I was running. And for those who, you know, this is a podcast, people can't see me. I'm not as big as I once was, but I'm still about 230 pounds and I was running. So, you know, there was some force when I impacted this thing that wasn't willing to move. What it was a garden box that was essentially built out of old rail ties, but it was totally immovable. I've visited this thing since actually, and it sort of sits there pretty smugly, but it's like this big, heavy, just like garden box. And I just wasn't looking. I was looking down one, I cut between two cars. I was looking in the opposite direction and full knee drive into the thing. It busted open and squeamish viewers don't listen. But first of all, important to note, Tex, that I did not go down. Okay. I know that's what I did not go down, but I took a couple steps. I was like, man, something's not right. And I looked down and could see too far into my knee. Like it was more than was appropriate or more than what I was used to. Long story short, I got it busted up. I got some stitches. I found out later that I cracked a little piece off the back of my kneecap and did some minor PCL damage, but the return, and I say all that to sort of map onto this, like you said, the gift of injury and grit, these things sort of overlap. Like, man, to do this intentionally, to have, and that's why this is one of the important things and why naming these qualities and teaching explicitly for them can be so empowering. Because when I got on the bike for the first time with like a swollen knee, you know, in medium to pretty legitimate pain, you know, I have to remind myself of those things. Like, this is why I'm doing this. It's going to be okay. You know, you can sort of, your self-talk changes when you know what you're after, you know? So, and in that process, like this morning, I sprinted for the first time in a long time.
Ooh, congrats. Welcome back.
Thanks, dude. I think a lot of people could probably have caught me, but I was doing it. And, it's been a pretty cool process, but like, you know, I think the gift of injury, I know that I've been forced to be really thoughtful in my return, and that has definitely enhanced my coaching.
And at a lesser extent, when we were teaching the CrossFit football seminar all over the world, we were running into coaches primarily took our course, and we were changing the way that they would set up for certain lifts to put it in a better position to transfer to other actions, jumping, sprinting, and a better position to transfer the training to the field. Mm-hmm. And they would experience this moment of doubt, this moment of, why can't I do this? Or this is not what I taught. Some form of barrier or wall that was presented to us, even though we were coaching and trying to make them better. And whether their back squat drops by 100 pounds, what they were able to do once before with their different setup, we would turn it into a lesson because they're going to take this information, certain setup execution, cool warm-ups that their athletes will undoubtedly fail at because they've never been exposed to them before and having different weaknesses and different planes of motion, turn this into a learning moment. What you're experiencing now and feeling of, I wasn't prepared or I'm not good enough, set up, so on and so forth, whatever they were feeling, using and turning that into a moment for them to communicate and teach and express, okay, but we're aiming towards a new goal. You're going to now bring and be able to squat that number in this different setup, which then better prepares you for plyometrics, demand, sport, deceleration, etc. We get the point. But using that as a learning opportunity And right. that seminar was chocked full of, we would build these athletes up and then break them down.
Yeah.
The coaches right. up to break them down, because knowing they're going to then go back in these scenarios where we only have 16 hours, 2 days to freaking hammer them. They have 4 years to develop. So if we can teach this minor lesson in one moment, one instance with one movement, imagine what that coach could do with that mindset over a 4 year development cycle.
Right. Right, man. No, that's so good to hear. I think it's so powerful. And that's the whole idea. And you just named, even in that brief idea that, like, yeah, I used to do it this way and I could squat 100 pounds more. It just reminds me of that. Does your behavior match your goal question? Like if you want to stay squatting that much weight, and then great, then keep doing what you're doing. If you want to reimagine it so that there's a different level of transfer, different application to the field or whatever, you know, then we're going to try this way. And only in those moments, once you like can honestly answer the question, does my behavior match my goal? Can you really start to tap into those other things? So now that I know that this is going to take a touch of humility and some grit and an obvious like sort of culture of growth mindset, now people will more freely accept those minor setbacks for major long-term returns.
So take us through some good, whether it's the Good Athlete Project courses and seminars and clinics that you have, or working with your staff. How do you empower them to then teach grit, or put them in a position to reference on their playing career to empower these kids to not get some negative self-doubt language and some beat up and all the things we don't want them, the traps and the holes we don't want them to fall into?
That's a good question. All right. Well, I'll say that, you know, we're doing this nonstop, but I'll say the thing that comes first to mind. We are trying right now because Illinois has reimagined its regulations just a touch, and because I'm really sort of knock on wood, hope we're moving in the right direction. We are thinking about what it's going to take to get powerlifting meets back. We've hosted powerlifting meets, a lot of powerlifting meets over the years. Maybe within those powerlifting meets, that might be the easiest to understand and most powerful sort of real world example about how we do this at scale. And then I can come back to some more nuanced stuff if you're interested. But all right. So one of the things the Good Athlete Project does is we house the Illinois High School Powerlifting Association. We created it. We consult for it. We've got a team of coaches. We've got more than 30 member schools now. It's one of the fastest growing sports in Illinois. Took a step back last year, obviously. You know, we had to do things remotely. We couldn't get in person. But in a regular year, we have 5 or 6 regional events, sort of local regional events that all build toward a state meet that has 200 athletes, invite only, co-ed. There's a guy's side, a girl's side, co-ed environment, and like hundreds more in attendance. It's a big, cool event. And I'll be honest, man, it's one of those things where I have to pinch myself sometimes, probably like you guys at the symposium in certain years, like, man, this wouldn't be here if we didn't sort of dream it up and wow, look at it. Like, that's pretty wild. So it's a really cool event. And what we do is after each flight, so after we do the squats, after each lift, after all the squats are done, before people start warming up for the next movement, we sort of stop the room. I've got a mic. We've got a big PA system. We've got 8 racks going, by the way. If anyone's been to a powerlifting meet, this is probably the biggest powerlifting meet you've ever seen outside of maybe Texas. We got 8 racks going, but we shut it down. We turn the music off. I get on the mic and we essentially walk people through. And can you imagine this, dude? Hundreds of people all there for powerlifting. We walk people through like a reflective sort of mindful like moment. And what we do is we say, let's just hang out for a second, take a breath. We're going to reflect on what just happened. What just happened was 200 people just put a max effort weight on their back and went down and came back up. And here's why that's important. When you were at the bottom of the lift, when you were at the sticking point, the easiest thing to do would have just been call it, let the spotters take over, rack that thing. The pain goes away immediately. You're all good. That's the easiest thing to do. But the thing you chose to do was keep going, do the harder thing. Like you went up when it was at its most difficult, you kept going. And whether you finished the lift or not, you made this decision to try to come out of the hole and finish the squat. And we ask people to sort of reflect on that moment and then name it. And, you know, we say like, was it grit? Was it resilience? Like, what was that capacity? Name it. Hold it there for yourself. You got to name it. We then go through this very brief exercise where we say, so we name, then we reflect. So reflect on a moment in your life that you used, let's just keep going with this idea of grit, where you used grit to get through a tough time. Maybe you didn't even know you were using it at the time, but where you used that capacity sort of push through, even though the easier way, you know, there was an easier way. You know, reflect on that. And that's not to get into the neuroscience too heavily, but that's essentially walking a path through the brain. You've got to access memories regularly in order to have them easily accessible. We can talk about that more if you want. But after the reflection, we then move to projection. So then we say, now I want you to think of, you know, one of the goals that you might have, whether that's graduate high school, go to college, become a college athlete, it could be anything. Imagine one of those goals. Imagine some of the hurdles you might have along the way, and then just project this capacity onto them. And the real hope in those moments is that they've sort of walked that path in their brain so that when they bump into the hurdle along the way, they can tap into it a little quicker. And like I said, you can be tough things in a silo don't matter that much. Tough things that can empower you and you can call upon them later. Like that's huge. That's empowering. That's life-changing. So that's just one of those exercises. And dude, I'm telling you, this is, if you ever have the inkling to come up for one of these, you're invited, because yeah, especially the reflection part, like people get choked up, you know, this, we don't want it to be too dramatic, but like, you know, people have been through some stuff sometimes, and then at the back end, people are empowered. Those moments can be really powerful for young people. We've had parents come up and thank us. It's been awesome. And I guess the last thing I would say about that is to anyone who's questioning whether they have time or space in their environment, like I just said, this is hundreds of people, 200 meatheads. I don't really mean that, they're great, but like, you know, 200 power lifters come together and we shut it down and take a breath and take a moment to reflect. Like it's totally doable. You just got to decide that you want to do it.
Oh man, that's incredibly powerful and certainly can be applied. You don't have to wait for that max effort moment, as perfect as it is, because you truly gave your all, success or failure. Mm-hmm. And then you have the opportunity to reflect, and then you're coaching them and you're teaching them how to find reflection, find a moment for when they do face that tragedy or challenge that they have again.
Right. Yeah, and the challenge is coming regardless. Yeah. Hopefully there's not a lot of tragedy, but there's definitely going to be a lot of challenge. And honestly, though, even at this point, you know, if you do it often enough, and then you ask like how we teach it in our staff, like we don't. So this is just me. I love to curse. I know all the words. I think they're fun to say. But when we're in the high school and youth environments, we just don't use them, you know, and our coach, we don't allow it from our coaches. We don't allow it from our kids. We don't allow hateful talk. We don't allow jokes on race or gender or sexuality. We just don't do it. Just don't be, we don't allow that stuff in our space. And in the same way we don't allow that, we highly encourage the other stuff. Like every coach on our staff needs to know what grit is and why it's important, what growth mindset is and means and why it's important. And like, I don't let my coaches use language behind the scenes, and I love them and I hope they at least like me, but they'd at least, I think minimally they'd report back that this is effective, even though it's hard sometimes. But like, if a coach comes in complaining, we don't have it. Like we don't complain. It's that Urban Meyer thing, like him or not, BCD, don't blame, complain, or defend your ineffective actions. Like, it all maps onto the same thing. We know what we want and we just return to it over and over and over again so that we don't even have to think about it. When stuff hits the fan.
Do you have your kids journal at all? How do they record? One, how are they recording their weights and tracking? Two, do you ask them to journal like put words down about feelings, failures, expressions, etc.?
It's a good question. When I do like I said, like some like personal development coaching, we sometimes will dig in a little deeper like that. We'll write, we'll read, we'll reflect on what we wrote and why that's the thing that we decided to linger on or examine or whatever it might be. At scale, we don't do as much of that. So but you're tapping on a really important idea, which is we do try to encourage self-reflection as often as possible. So we track using a variety of softwares, you know, so we distribute our programs electronically, and then so we can track through that so they can reflect on it. But we also have at the beginning of each day, one of the things that we do is we do sort of a wellness check-in, but it's not even really that, man. It's we talk about sleep quality, sleep quantity, stress quality, and stress quantity. And that, there's an interesting discussion just there. Like for most of the people we work with, that has never been distinguished before, the amount of stress versus the quality of that stress. And then we ask people to reflect on their nutrition. So, you know, they fill that out 3 times a week. So, at scale, like I said, when we have 2000 visits, we're not asking all 2000 to journal because we want it to be a digestible thing. And
yeah,
but, yeah, we are doing those surveys to encourage self-reflection.
Sweet. And hopefully that translates into to-do lists and all the other aspects of, very successful, researched ways to self-improve and get shit done is all I'm trying to say, is making that to-do list.
Yeah. 100%. Well, okay. And to be, if I want to dig in further, or if you want to dig in further, that's sort of like level one. That's like our base level, mostly scaled level of engagement does not include those things. But the further down we go, the closer we get to a person, the more we do. And you know what? And you might be able to tell just by this right now, but I talk a lot, and we talk a lot. Like our staff talks a lot. Like we, you know, one of our coaches was told when he was doing an internship, like you got to be more than a whiteboard. Like you can't just tell them you can't tell them the lift and let them go. So we're engaging nonstop. So I would say that an extension of that journaling idea is we're constantly just poking around, having conversations, you know. How was the weekend? How was the Super Bowl? What'd you eat? Like all that kind of stuff, nonstop.
Yeah, let's touch base on that. The no secret to our Power Athlete Radio listeners, I coach middle school lacrosse, and technically, if you want to list me on a program, the 7th grade B team coach.
Oh yeah, head coach?
No, assistant.
Like, okay, sorry. Okay,
the lowest in the whole program, but then, if you were to observe a practice, this is where I shine. And they took ownership of the warmups and we put in our Power Athlete athleticism model. I am on my Instagram dropping different warmup tools, what, why, and where my mind is for our listeners that want to follow along, just having some fun with field sport athleticism development. But then off the side, the skills, the drills, and all that good stuff, I do enjoy it and love it. But then taking it upon myself to get these kids ready to face some adversity and talk and take a little shit and talk a little shit. I don't allow myself to curse at practice as well, but for our listeners to talk shit. So teaching them,
listeners of this podcast love shit and all those.
Yeah. And in lacrosse, there's a lot of downtime for certain positions, meaning attack and defense. Right. If the ball's on the opposite end of the field, you get to just hang out awkwardly next to this person.
Mm-hmm.
Much like we see in NFL films and catch some clips of cornerbacks and wide receivers jawing and talking some trash. There's a lot of downtime where the play is away from you. So I've taken it upon myself to educate these young men how to interact when the focus is not on them. So still paying attention to the game, but how to communicate constructively, again, no cursing, to, learn to take some jawing and give some jawing back. And
there you go.
I feel this will put them in a position when they do face the high school, which is a lot more stricter than the show we're running, and their coaches will probably jump up you know, get on them a lot more harder, that they won't talk back. They won't be frustrated. They'll take it all in stride because, hey, this is just part of the game. Let's turn this conditioning or this punishment into funishment and just crush it. Ooh. And I'll tell you what, also the note that I'm giving them is, hey, always ask a coach for more. Is that all you got? Mm. So as they do progress in their high school and maybe collegiate careers, they'll showing their grit by how they're communicating and standing and posturing. And most importantly, talking back without talking back to their head coaches.
Right. Yeah. I mean, communication, if you think about all the things that could be learned through sport, all the quote unquote life lessons, like communication, healthy communication, whether it's downtime or in moments of chaos, whether it's, you know, strategizing, making friends on the team, whatever it might be, communication's the one, isn't it? Like that's the one thing that for sure isn't going away. You're going to need this. That's interesting. I'm glad that you're doing that, man, because that's, you know, obviously I and the team at the Good Athlete Project and at Nutria, we wouldn't be doing this work if we weren't 100% on the side of coaches. Like this is that, you know, coaches, we believe like they are the directors. They are the facilitators of one of the most powerful learning environments on the planet. Like these are our people. This is who we want to be with, who we want to talk to and who we want to support. In the supporting of that, we recognize that sometimes, you know, we get so caught up, and I'm no exception to this, but we get so caught up in the long-term goals, to continue to sort of map this onto the grit idea. We get so caught up in the long-term goals that we might forget those sorts of nuances. And then we do punish by running, which is like my least favorite way of punishing and things like that. When we could probably, you know, if we were able to reflect and say, well, what do we want to do? Do we want to punish them? No, we want to, what we're trying to do in the punishment is we're trying to modify behavior. That's what we're trying to do. And then you come to this question, and I think of those same kids that you're working with, when they get to high school, had they not been taught these skills by well-intended people like you, when they get to high school and that maybe there is more yelling and maybe there's less patience and maybe there's more focus on winning than development, hypothetically, maybe, hopefully not, but you know, a lot of those kids are just going to shut down. And then all of a sudden you get these narratives coming from like, well, that guy doesn't care. Well, you know, maybe not, maybe this is not the case. Maybe this kid, you know, maybe they don't have the communication skills to successfully navigate this really high stress environment, especially when they're being yelled at by someone who they walked in the door almost automatically admiring. You know, it becomes a complicated thing to comb through. If I may, I would say that because it seems complicated, you guys were so kind to publish another article, the UMA article, Understanding Motivation Access, on the Power Athlete blog, not terribly long ago. I think that for people who maybe are fast forward to the high school coaches who are really trying to win, who can't figure out why they're not getting the behavior out of kids that they want, that might be a good one to reflect back on as well. Because, you know, in the building of grit, we can talk about methods for that, whatever, but in the building of grit, if it's just not taking, if you're not getting the behavior modification that you want, to evaluate through three lenses that we talk about in that article, understanding, motivation, and access, you know, which one of those is missing, that's probably a really good starting point.
And I believe a good ending point, Jim, for today's show. Not our discussion and conversations, but we promised a short episode and we pushed it a little long, but this is a great discussion.
Yeah, man. I always enjoy talking to you. This is good.
Well, let our listeners know where they can learn more from you, where to find you, and then I'll direct them to the article and more.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, the website is goodathleteproject.com. We're most active on Instagram at Good Athlete Project. I think those are probably the main two. And I respond to the Instagram DM. So if you want to reach me, you can go there or email me jim@goodathleteproject.com. We host workshops. We do one-on-one consulting with coaches. We do all sorts of stuff. We are a nonprofit organization, just so people know. So yeah, it's meaningful work. We're happy to do it and would love to hear from folks.
Excellent. And read Jim's article at powerathletehq.com. We'll link it up on our Instagram as well and in the show notes. So catch that here. I'll link up all your blogs. I'll do you a solid.
So I appreciate you, man.
Yes. Scanning for Deltas, UMA. All right, Jim. Thank you very much, my friend. Have a great weekend. Happy Friday.
Appreciate it, man. You the same.
All right. Bye.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Head to powerathletehq.com/training to choose from a number of programs to meet your specific performance goals. And if you like to break a mental sweat too, visit academy.powerathletehq.com and become a real stakeholder in you or your athlete's success. Until next time, bye!